also have taken lots of other like certifications. So I've done two coaching certifications, which I think everyone should be coaching certified for a couple of different reasons, because there is nothing more important that you do in life than communicate. I don't care whether you're in tech, whether you are in education, anything you do in this life is about communication.
That's good.
And that's listening, and that's conversing. And coaching allows you to first understand yourself and regulate yourself and regulate your emotions and your stories, but then it allows you to listen at such a heightened level. And it's just an amazing thing. Lockheed had a program, and then I also went to a program at George Mason that was absolutely amazing.
I searched all over the world, struggling to find it. Then I met my boy, David E. Simons. Yeah, I searched all over the world, struggling to find it. Then I met my boy, David E. Simons. Yeah, discover my gift. Yeah, yeah, discover my gift. Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to another episode of How I Discovered My Gift with yours truly, David D. Simons. My excited is super excited today. I can't wait for y'all to hear about the talent multiplier, Natalie Renee Parker. This is an episode I already know you're going to need to listen to multiple times again. She is a woman filled with wisdom and insight and revelation knowledge that's going to help you in your journey. So let me tell you a little about Natalie. She's a New Jersey native, NJ in the house. She earned her bachelor's degree in English literature from Bennett College and a master's degree in organizational management from George Washington University. Mrs. Parker has nearly 20 years of experience in human resources and has held leadership roles of increasing responsibility in companies such as Lockheed Martin, Amtrak, Resolute Forest Products. And as a thought leader in organizational development, she has proven ability in the implementation, design, and process improvements of companies, strategic human resource processes, and such as process management, such as performance management, talent and leadership development, as well as employee effectiveness. In 2010, she started Five Talents Consulting. Ah, snap. See, she's already in the spirit. Like, that's where we're going. A business that helps faith-based organizations lead effectively by combining biblical principles with practical business applications to grow congregants and church leadership. Natalie and her husband, Reverend Khalil Parker, who have also got the pleasure to meet, shout out to Rev, reside in Fort Mill, South Carolina with their two wonderful children. Natalie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Awesome, David. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Oh, wow. I'm so excited to dig in, but I'm going to go way back, Natalie. I want you to take me to like childhood, Natalie, right? Like as a child, take me from childhood, the journey from there to now, like just a overview.
Yeah. So I grew up in Pensauken, so right across the bridge from Philly. And shout out to anybody who ever got on the report card talks too much, because that was me, right? Every single report card from preschool to high school talks too much. That was every report card. And I just loved people, my dad said I could talk the bark off a tree. And I just loved to have conversation. And by the time I was about, I don't know, maybe like four or five, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? You know, we grew up with these great, you know, TV people were like, oh my God, I want to be Claire Huxtable. Like, you're going to be a lawyer. And around six, I was like, no, I want to be a professional conversationalist. I just want to be paid to talk to people. And so, I think I was just really enthralled with the idea of talking to people. We grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood on the street, 42nd Street. And we were the first Black people in the neighborhood. And so I grew up one of three people in a very white classroom. And my mom, being from the South, we talked very proper. So I tell people all the time, I couldn't say ain't till I got to college. I couldn't use contractions until I got to college. Wow. So it was a very interesting thing growing up in, you know, the school system. My mom got us into magnet schools. So it was like before charter schools or magnet schools where, you know, you were elite schools. And so we had a really great education and we did a lot of reading in my house. My mom was an avid reader. My dad was a truck driver. So we had this really interesting balance of education. My mom was really big on education and reading. And my dad was really big on hard work. Right. Mm. And so this balance, and both of them were people of faith. My mom was a preacher's kid and my dad was just really, really devout. And the balance of that, of both of them is such a wonderful thing that I still have, and love. My brother's 5 years older than me. He, is also a big part of who I am in terms of just how mature I am because I didn't have a sister. So I hung out with the guys all the time. Right. And so in that, it was one of the reasons why I went to Bennett for undergrad. Two reasons. One, because I grew up around a lot of predominantly white people. I wanted to be in an experience that was Black because I didn't have that as a foundation. I got that on Sunday at church, but not a lot else. And I wanted to be around, I decided I wanted to be around women because I had all these male relationships, great male relationships. Mm-hmm. But in high school, I didn't. I hung around a lot of boys and the girls didn't like that a lot. So I went to Bennett to get that. And so just a really great foundation, a lot of family. My dad's family's from New Jersey. My mom's family from Virginia. And so we traveled back and forth. I spent summers in the South, like a lot of Northerners do. So we'd pick up and we literally spent the entire summer in the South and, you know, growing up, with our cousins. Interesting story. Have a cousin who grew up in Pensacola with me that I never knew I had until my young adult life. She was adopted by a family around the corner. We sung in the same high school and turns out she was a cousin. Wow. And so just amazing, amazing fabric in our family, educators and hardworking people.
Beautiful. And so how did that lead into this world, the career world, out of college and all the things that you've been doing there? How did you transition?
Yeah. So, when I left, so senior year of high school, I really wanted to go to Howard University. You could not have told me anything different. I prayed and prayed. I got the shirt and sweater to go to Howard. I got the acceptance letter. I pinned it to my sweater and wore it around school all day. And then when I visited Howard University, I knew I wasn't supposed to go there and it was devastating. It was one of those things where like, okay, you know what? The Lord was like, yeah, you wanted to go there, but that's not where I wanted you to go. And it was, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's not God's will. And you just, it was, and I'm like, what do I do with this? And I got a postcard in the mail from Bennett College. I had never heard of Bennett College. I'm like, what is a Bennett College? And I got accepted to 13 schools.
Yeah.
Right. I had great grades. I was an all South Jersey javelin thrower, volleyball, like I was all of the things. And so I'm like, why am I going to this rinky dink school? And one of the ladies in the high school was like, oh my God, Bennett's amazing. My uncle went to Elon. He's like, oh, Bennett Bells are amazing. I'm like, whatever. It's not prestigious. I've never heard of it. And he's like, I'll drive you down. We're going to go. And I stepped on campus and I got just that spiritual confirmation. Like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And it was just peace. It was just peace. And it was the best decision I never wanted to make. And that experience gave me the nurturing, the leadership, the space to figure out my identity, who I am, both in Christ as a Black woman, as a leader, just all of the things. I got to meet Condoleezza Rice. I got to meet John Hope Franklin. I got to meet all of these people in a very intimate space, and be a consummate professional, understanding that my competition wasn't around me, right? I'm in this space, like we are all together. We're not competing against each other. We're competing against what's out there. Right. And from that, I left Bennett thinking, okay, I'm going to be a lawyer, right? I'm going to go out here and I'm going to be a lawyer because I can do these things. I was an English major, as you read. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to read books all my life. That's not fun. But I was good at it. But I was like, I'm going to go be a lawyer. Went home, studied for the LSAT, and didn't get a good grade. I was like, okay. It's like, okay. So I paid Kaplan, tried to take it again, and I got 1 point extra. And I had a coworker, and I had a neighbor. This is a really interesting thing about having good relationships. The neighbor, my dad said, Natalie needs an internship. She's like, oh, I know someone. He introduces me to someone who says, okay, well, we're going to take you to this interview. They take me to the interview. Woman interviews me and I get an opportunity to work for a company called Lockheed Martin. And for 3 summers, I worked for Lockheed Martin, really not knowing what it was. I could barely spell the company name. And for 3 summers, I worked for them. So when I came home from Bennett after graduating, my HR person said to me, well, you're not going to a law school. We need a body and you need benefits. That was the conversation. So they gave me a job working in procurement. And I worked in procurement for 3 years, not knowing what I wanted to do. And literally my first year during Lockheed was during 9/11, right? I got hired and then a month later, the Twin Towers went down. And during that time was just super transformational, me just having to figure out what I wanted to do. And I prayed and I searched myself and I also lived, and found my people in Philly and had a lot of fun. And I figured out that I didn't want to buy parts for the rest of my life. And I also figured out that I was in a really big company and I created networks and had some really great mentors. And I figured out I liked training. I liked teaching people how to learn. And I parlayed that into a opportunity. I saw that Lockheed had a leadership development program. I tried to get in the normal ways of applications and talking to the people who were in charge locally. That didn't work out. And this is a story around how, if it doesn't work out the natural way, maybe you need to go other ways. A friend of mine took me to a dinner and it was an award ceremony. And we went to the award ceremony. I sat next to somebody and we talked it up. It was an amazing man. We had this great conversation. He said, kid, I really like you. And if you ever need anything, call me. I said, sir, don't say that if you don't mean it. And he said, no, I really mean it. Again, didn't know who he was. Didn't know who he was, David. And so went back home to Jersey. That was in DC.
Yeah.
And tried to get in. I'm trying to get into this leadership development program. Nobody's helping me. Went back and got a less than stellar performance review, knowing that I knocked it out of the park. Everybody was super surprised, but it was one of those things where it was a forced distribution of performance and somebody had to get the mediocre rating and it was me because I was new. And so the manager kind of lightweight apologized to me, listen, I know it's a bad break, but you're young and it'll be fine. And so I called this guy and said, hey, listen, I want to talk to you. I'll be back in DC. He said, oh, sure. And I told him I wanted to get in the program. He said, okay. And I told him what happened. I told him I had talked to some other person who was, and he's like, well, don't talk to people who can't help you with your problems. And this person ended up being the senior HR vice president of HR for the company. He was one of 4 reporting into the chief human resource officer. And he ended up being a major mentor to me while I was there. And that put my career on a trajectory that I couldn't have even orchestrated for myself.
Wow.
And to this day, I'm so grateful. So terribly grateful for that relationship. And from there, I was able to, he was probably one of the people to get me on the track to, he and a couple of others, this is one of five bookshelves in the house. We read a ton. Wow. We are big into learning. We are big into just keeping ourselves abreast of what's going on. So we left Lockheed and we did a lot of amazing things. And we took a lot of amazing challenges that we didn't necessarily want, but God places you in places where he's like, okay, go do this. And you learn, and you grow and you keep going. The same thing with Amtrak, the same thing with other companies.
That's amazing. That's amazing, Natalie. What a journey. When you look at it, what is your most dominant gift, right? So this show is called How I Discovered My Gift. And I never told you this beforehand, but the show is built. That's why I was excited when I was talking about your consulting company name. The show is based on the parable of the talents. The one that had one, the one that had two, the one that had five. And we talk about the gifting that God has given, because just like the person with five, we're supposed to multiply it. We're supposed to develop it. And the whole show, the premise is that God showed me a revelation of that scripture, that there are three steps, that one is implied, two are very explicit. The first step is discover what God has given you to get to do in this world and in the impact, right? He may not yell, Natalie, this is what you're supposed to do. You know, he may not do that, but you discover it through your time, your recreation, your family, your what interest. And the second step is to develop it into mastery, because God never wants you to keep it at whatever state he gives it to you. It has to become better. And then the third D is the implied one, which is to distribute it and market it into the marketplace like you're doing. So with all that said, what is your most dominant gift, in your opinion?
I would say that during my time at Lockheed, I prayed to get into that program and I got in, right? I was super excited. And I got my first position, which was in Jersey. So I was able to stay home, and I was trying to get my second one in King of Prussia, which is like right over the bridge, right? Didn't happen. Yep. I ended up getting shipped to Florida. And it was the loneliest season for me. And because I knew no one, like I pick up, move to Florida, to Orlando, which, you know, I was like, oh my God, it's Orlando, but it's Orlando, right? It's not home. And it was a great place of solitude, because God has an opportunity to just arrest you, right? And I found in that space for me that I was able to really hone in on that. And for me, I got a chance to really hear and associate with Deborah from Judges 4, and the gift of the prophetic and discernment is really something that I heavily identify with. And it's the thing that is a differentiator for me, to be able to go in a business, to go into a client and understand and see what's happening, and to use everything I've learned in the business space and apply that with discernment in a way it amplifies exponentially the result that I'm able to achieve. And I think that for me is what's the differentiator. As believers, we don't have an additive God, we have an exponential God. And a lot of times we're looking for the force multiplier when we should be looking for the exponent.
That's good. I'm so curious, when did you recognize this gifting in your childhood? Or if you did, right? Or like, when was the earlier signs of it? And then if you could also, I feel listeners are robbed, because I got to experience your gift on a call not too long ago, and I was blown away. But maybe we might get into that. But if you could give us an example from childhood and an example in an organizational setting as well.
So I will say it's hard in childhood because you don't, it's perceived as being mouthy. Right? When right. you're able to see things very clearly that other people can't see, it comes across as either being a know-it-all or being hoity, especially if you're not, because you don't have the grace to be able to position it. And so a lot of times I was just like, oh, well, this is dumb, or this is stupid. Here are 17 better ways you could do this. And and having that level of awareness without the maturity was really difficult because it was just a lot of misplaced. It was hard to deal with, right? So, as a child, it was being really clear about things that most people didn't see. So for example, in adolescence, I didn't do a lot of like bickering. Like I didn't do a lot of he said, she said. I just never saw the point in it. Like I never did a lot of girl gossip things. Mm-hmm. I never did a lot of like, I was always fascinated by people like, oh my God, you have the same shoes as me. Well, they're mass produced. Like I never understood why people were bent out of shape at that. Like you biting off of me, you got the same shoes. They're literally made in a factory. Like, just like, I never understood those kinds of things. Or, you know, girlfriends who were friends, a friend circle, getting mad about one girl telling a secret over before the other girl found out. Like just, I never got into, it just seemed superficial to me. So I just, those kinds of things never appealed to me. And it, and I was perceived as a snob just because that wasn't my, that wasn't the thing that interests me. So that set apartness is, I think is a sign because your headspace is just so different than everyone else's. That's for me, that's a symptom. When your headspace is just so different, where you're not entertained by the same things, when your when your common denominator is a lot higher than everyone else's, it's a sign that you may be, you know, you may be cut from a different cloth.
That's right. I love it. Now I gotta hear an example from organizational level. Like it could be early on in career. It could be later. It could be something that stands out to you. I just think listeners should hear your, how this ability works in the setting, in this business realm.
So I have a client whom I have had a great relationship with for more than, 20 plus years. And he is trying to build an amazing organization. And I have earned the right, the space of trusted advisor to him and his organization. And one of the things that we often do is talk about the culture. And early in the infancy in his organization, you know, we talked about, well, how do you build something that's, you know, that stands beyond, you know, just like, let's have a good culture. And the thing that I said to him was like, it's got to be bigger than you. Like, it has to be bigger than you. It's got to be, if you think about major cultures, it's got to be bigger than Disney. It's got to be bigger than Chick-fil-A. Disney's been gone for a long time. But the thought of Disney, the context of Disney, who you are, you have to figure out how to distill your essence and what you believe and boil that down to the least common denominator and infuse that into the inner workings of your organization and make that the language of how you do business. And that's how you live beyond your years. And we've started to do that we're starting to see that 3 years later. Wow. Another example of that is I have another client who, they're having some challenges growing. They're an organization who's based in the United States and they are largely represented outside of the United States, but their entire leadership team is in the Northeast. And in doing a series of interviews, getting feedback, I've had to provide feedback to the leadership team and let them know that based on the feedback that I heard, you know, you have a misalignment. What you're saying you want versus what I see you doing is not the same thing. And while I hear what you're saying, what I see you doing is in misalignment.
Wow.
And you want to be a global company, but you're a US company that's doing business globally. And those two things are largely different. Wow. And you need to define the difference very quickly if you want to be credible in the things that you say you want to do. And it's a very risky thing to do when you're internal to a company, right?
Yeah.
And you have to have the grace, you have to have the maturity, you have to have the trust to be able to say those things.
Yeah.
And you have to do it in service, right? I'm not there to attack. I'm there to hold the space for what you said you wanted.
I'm so curious, Natalie. How did they respond to that?
I think there was a bit of step back and reflection, but it wasn't shock awe and grabbing pearls. Right? It wasn't like, oh, how could you, it wasn't that. It was, I think I could see that, right? And because of we were able to secure another year's worth of relationship with that client and more trust. And I think that's the genuine joy that I have in what we're able to do is to be able to say things like that and say, okay, now let me help you. Let's walk together and do this together. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference of a transactional consultant that comes in to just do one thing versus a partner. And I think we've talked about this, that I seek to be a partner. I'm here to work with you until you can do this yourself.
It's so rare in your space. I mean, when I think about HR and then I talk to you, I feel like it's a whole world of apart, different. Like when I hear traditional HR and then the way you look at it is a different lens and a better lens. Could you just kind of like infuse to the listeners how you view what we call HR, but the way you look at it, I think is just, it's more transformational. As you were saying, it's less transactional. So if you could go into that a little bit for us.
So I'll say this, that there's a couple things. One is, I am, now that I've moved to the consulting space, I have a bit of opportunity to do a bunch of different things, everything from, change management to organizational design and all of those things. But I got I grew up in a really great organization. I cannot speak more highly of Lockheed Martin and how they grow HR leaders, specifically because it's not just about the tactics of compensation or business partnering or talent acquisition. It is the strategic combination of how those things work together on behalf of the business. And the business acumen to know how those things impact your ability to make money. Right? A guy that I worked with in Resolute Force Products, his name is Steve Bonifaro. Steve Bonifaro says it this way. He says, nobody sells HR. They sell products, right? Resolute Force Products sells paper. Lockheed Martin sells defense, aerospace and defense things, right? No one sells HR. Well, at least Bamboo HR sells HR, but most companies don't sell HR. They sell HR as an enablement factor. And so the HR function should always see itself as in service to the business. And if the functions within the business, like HR and finance and business operations, don't see themselves in service to the financials of the business of performing, they're not doing themselves any service. And so for me, it's the totality, the systematic operating together of those things that work together. Like for me, it's a no-brainer. So how do those things work together systematically? So I'm not your person. I told you, David, I enjoy the strategic perspective. If you put me in front of a spreadsheet and said, look at this 14,000 lines of data and find 7 errors. I'm not your person. That's not my gift. Praise God for everyone whose gifting that is. I know a lot of people like that, and I praise God for them. That's not my gift. But if you ask me to look at the systems and how they work together for the benefit of the organization, that's where I have the best impact, right? And so the transformation comes when you're able to pull the best of all of those things together and see where things are misaligned, right? Your car works because your tires are in alignment, your engine is firing on all cylinders, the steering wheel is in alignment, like all of those things are together, right? Yeah. When they're not in alignment, then something's off. Does that help at all?
That helps tremendously. Wow. So, I mean, it's such a holistic view and a holistic approach you have to it. I want to go into something that you talked about earlier, right? You said you have 5 bookshelves of just books, and I'm probably sure there's even more in your Audible or your audio and your YouTube channel, all of that, right? But I don't think somebody gets to your level, and we're going to talk more. I would like to talk specifically about your business in a little bit later, but nobody gets to your level without strong development into themselves, that development. And I like to talk about the unseen hours, right? The work in the dark when nobody's watching, right? Mm-hmm. Like what you're doing and to develop yourself to the level you've been able to today, to be this prominent leader and consultant. What does it really take behind the scenes? What kind of development have you poured into yourself over the last 20 plus years to become who you are today?
Oh man. So that's a really deep question. I have been blessed to have had the gift of really good feedback, even if I didn't like it all the time, even if it wasn't packaged in the right way. I've also had the benefit of some really, I'll say it, some really bad leaders. Like I've had some really, I'll say to your listeners, don't be upset when you have bad situations. You know, I have worked for some folks who were not stellar at leadership, and they have actually taught me the antithesis of what it meant to be good leaders. And in that learning, it helped me, right? Sometimes the anti-model was the best model to learn from. So that came to mind for me as you were talking. But in my working spaces, I've been able to take some really great courses at University of Virginia. I've also, you know, the George Washington, the organizational development master's was an amazing program. I also have taken lots of other like certifications. So I've done 2 coaching certifications, which I think everyone should be coaching certified for a couple of different reasons, because there is nothing more important that you do in life than communicate. I don't care whether you're in tech, whether you are in education, anything you do in this life is about communication.
That's good.
And that's listening, and that's conversing. And coaching allows you to first understand yourself and regulate yourself and regulate your emotions and your stories, but then it allows you to listen at such a heightened level. And it's just an amazing thing. Lockheed had a program, and then I also went to a program at George Mason that was absolutely amazing. I've done a ton of assessment certifications, so Strength Finders, DDI, DISC, all of those. Those are also great tools. Crush the Stage, I did that. Speaking Business Mastery with Dr. Della Toro. I've done a ton of things, and I just strongly believe in learning. Like, just learn. Yeah. Just learn something. Just don't stop growing. If you are not growing, that which is not growing is dying.
That's right.
And as it relates to the talents, that understanding of pouring into yourself because so many of us don't know our purpose. So many of us don't know. And so if you don't know, go find something until you do. Right. I'm not saying go throw good money after bad. Like, I don't believe in going and getting 17 degrees and 22 certifications. What I'm saying is go discover, go on a discovery to find what God put inside of you. And when you find it, by God, pour into that thing. Right. I went to seminary. I've been to seminary. That was amazing. Oh, wow. And we read all of the time, and we write, and we listen. We've got audiobooks galore. We also do a lot of, YouTubing. My husband, I call him Rev and I were just listening to Francis Chan this morning. And we also spend time being quiet. And as a family, we've also instituted, gratitude journaling. So we actually sit at the end of every day after dinner. It sounds corny. We're not corny. We actually are actually quite beautifully chaotic in this house, but, we sit down and we journal for 7 minutes. Everybody has a journal. My son is 8. My daughter is 5. She's 5. Don't tell anybody. You'll get that wrong. She's 5. And we journal for the four of us journal for 7 minutes. Everybody gets out their journal and just one thing. What are you grateful for the day? Everybody's got a little journal and we all journal, and it's amazing.
That is profound. I believe we were on a call the other day and your daughter was having an entrepreneurial experience, right? And like selling y'all some products and y'all, I thought that was the cutest thing. And then you said, I'm so glad you brought this up, because then you said, yeah, this is something you can add to your journal. Like, that is such like intentional parenting. Like, where did you learn that from? And how did you include that into, like, I just think it's so phenomenal.
All right. So I'll say this, that back in 2022, I was working for a company, which I had decided was going to be my last corporate company. I thought it was going to be my dream job. It had the title I wanted, not the comp I wanted, but the title I wanted. It was like, finally, somebody recognizes me from what I'm worth. Because the company before that, I was just burnt out. And so it was virtual. I could work from home. The kids were smaller, and it was the middle of COVID, and I didn't want to travel anymore, because the first 6 years of my children's life, at least Nathan's life, I was traveling 50% of the time. God bless my husband. He's a saint. And it wasn't working out. We traveled to DC. We were at a event and I felt deathly ill. I just couldn't figure out what was going on. I was just like, I just felt terrible. I was like, what's going on here? Yeah. And the room was spinning. My heart was racing. And I said, I got to go to you've got to take me. I feel like I'm dying. And they took me to the ER and my hemoglobin was at 6, David. And whoa, that number didn't mean anything to me at the time, but apparently your hemoglobin is supposed to be at 13. That's like the normal level. And critical is 8. And deathly is 7. And it was at 6.
Oh my God.
And I laid on that table and the doctor was like, we are so glad you came in, because this could have ended terribly. And that was on March the 6th, 2022. Wow. And that day is when I decided, I prayed to God. I said, if I died right now, we'll have done what God told me to do with my life. And the answer was no. And so I got laid there and got a transfusion, prayed all night, couldn't sleep because I thought I was going to die. My husband, we were there for pastoral installation of a friend, and he had to minister for that. We flew home that next day, and then we had to go through a series of medical appointments and what have you. Long story short, a couple weeks later, I met someone who ended up being a prayer warrior in my life, and it turned the tides. I ended up leaving that job on June the 6th, and on June the 7th, I had my first client for Natalie Parker Enterprises. And that really started this kind of intentional lifestyle of like, I'm just not going to have this autopilot life of working for a corporation or doing all these things that I'm supposed to do and questioning everything from how many hours I'm supposed to work and what time things have to happen and all of those things.
Wow.
So, I know that was a long answer, but.
Oh, I'm so glad you shared it and so glad you went into that. I mean, that is profound. And that's not that long ago, right? Like that is a life altering.
It was.
Transition and kudos to you. I mean, so I want to dig in because there are people that were maybe on that journey that you were, hey, I'm going to get the cushiest office and the big corner space and the title and working towards the comp. What would you say to that person that's chasing? And there's purpose for everybody. I'm not saying, but I want you to speak to that person that wants to leave right now and would love to make a transition in, like you did, from being in the corporate world and maybe become a consultant, maybe go into their own business. What would you say to them to encourage them?
I would say, don't let your comfort zone be your coffin.
Woo. That's a bar.
At the end of the day, I had to be confronted with death to decide that if I'm going to be obedient or not. Like, I knew the answer, and I didn't have the pressure of death to figure out how to do it. Right? Wow. I didn't have the pressure of death to like, okay, like, I need to do this. I need to do this right now, and I need to figure it out. And the pressure of death made me reconsider my assumptions of time. And what's really interesting about that is that the same person that we were there to install, the pastor friend of ours, was a very good friend of ours, didn't end the year. He ended up passing away that December 31st.
Oh my God.
At 36 years old. And so I challenge you all to relieve yourself of any assumptions you have of time. That's number one. Ask yourself, what would you do if you weren't afraid? Like, what would you really do if you weren't afraid? Three, ask yourself, what would you do if you actually trusted God? If you actually really trusted him like you say you do. And I found it really freeing. Like once I decided like, this is what I'm doing. Once I really decided like I'm doing this, it literally took away every barrier I had to thinking about not doing it. It just was that simple. It was just like every barrier, like I don't know what I'm going to do. And I don't like, it was like every resource came. It just was like, I'm telling you, every idea, I told him, I'm thinking about starting a business. Okay, how can I help you? Wow. Ask God for the discernment on who you need to tell and who not to tell. That's important. Like who not, you already know who not to tell. Wow. But you know who's rooting for you. Tell those people, get in a prayer circle, get in a corner, make your plans and execute them. It doesn't take a lot. It just takes one step. And for those of you who are looking for an entire like plan, he doesn't give you that. He wants you to be obedient with the first thing. Then he'll give you the next thing.
Wow. That is so beautifully stated. I'm still chewing on. What did you say? Don't make your comfort zone your coffin.
Don't let your comfort zone be your coffin. And the last thing I'll say is that delayed obedience is still disobedience. And it's going to cost you some level of sacrifice.
Wow. That's strong, Natalie. Wow. So I kind of want to go into a bit about Natalie Parker Enterprises and what you guys do and how you help. Or you kind of touched on it a bit, but talk to me about what you do in this vision, this dream that now you're living in, and this entity. So talk to us about that.
So Natalie Parker Enterprises is really birthed out of Five Talents Consulting. So back in 2010, I started Five Talents Consulting with the idea of I want to help churches operate better, more efficiently, using all the stuff I learned in corporate, plus the biblical principles, right? And I did that for a long time. Had some really great clients, had some really great pastors who trusted me, and it just didn't take off. Just because, you know, churches have limited resources and, you know, it is what it is. But we still do some of that work. And this new venture gives me the opportunity to really help organizations and individuals who want to do good work. And the idea of good work is work that pleases your God, that is good for other people, and serves your purpose. So it's good for God, good for others, and good for you. And it's about healthy organizations. When you think about organizations being healthy, you think of bodies being healthy, like mind, body, spirit. Organizations are also organisms, right? You can have a toxic organization, but you can also create healthy organizations, right? Ones that are on purpose and are in purpose and are working functionally. And those are hard to create, but they're not hard when you're intentional. And you have to be willing to face some hard truths. You have to be willing to face some ghosts and some demons and part ways with some people and suffer loss. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, we help organizations do that. So we go in, we take an assessment and we give recommendations on what we think needs to happen from either a talent development perspective or a leadership development perspective. And in some cases, organizational design. Yep. And we support on the long haul of change management and growth. And the enterprises is really, as we're growing, we're moving into different spaces, right? On the faith-based front, as well as others.
Mm, I love it. So take me through some, like a challenge somebody may be having and something that your organization will help them to do to, you kind of shared one example, but just take me through like an organization that may be dealing with some kind of challenge in their leadership and their, and how you would help them transform. And I know it's a process. It doesn't happen like overnight, but can you give us an example?
Sure. So one of the major challenges right now organizations are having is that with the post-COVID communities, everyone's dispersed and people don't want to come back to work. So how do you build organizational community where people are all over the place and not necessarily co-located? And so a leader will call us, an executive will call us and say, hey, listen, I'm having a hard time with people either coming together or gaining agreement or, you know, operating effectively as a unit. Mm-hmm. So we've got a client right now who's got a team of executives and they're newly put together and they're not really gelling well. And we've been assigned to assess what the challenges are, assess the behaviors. And I say behaviors, not like they're behaving badly, but what are the perspectives and norms of those leaders and maybe even the styles, and get them to present those and share their ideals with each other and come up with some norms and agreements on how they can have mutual accountability. So not just accountability, but mutual accountability. And it's different. So a lot of times when you think of accountability, we think it's bad, like, oh, I don't want to be accountable to you because you're going to, you know, just demand things of me. But with mutual accountability, David, I'm able to say to David, I'm committed to you and you're committed to me. And we are equally accountable to each other.
That's right.
And a lot of people don't like that because even if I don't have position power, if you said you were going to give me a resource that's going to help me be accountable to you and you didn't, I'm able to say, hey, David, I may report to you, but you said you were going to do something for me.
I love that.
In a healthy organization, an employee should be able to say to their leader, you're not being accountable. That's healthy. That's healthy to say you didn't meet your commitment.
That's
beautiful. And a lot of times we don't want to do that because of position power. And that's not efficient to let people just scapegoat on their accountabilities.
That's right.
Just because of a position.
Wow.
It's far more healthy to be like, hey, I know you're my leader and I still need that report.
That's right.
If you want me to do what I say, right? Like it's always silly to me that we create these dynamics that are unsustainable for business. It's just not normal. And so those are the things that get me in trouble sometimes. Cause it's like, okay, that's, you maintain these politics and they're not healthy.
Yes. What is it? What do you call it? The whisper, the organizational.
Organizational whisper.
The organizational whisper. I mean, it's soothing. It suits you because it's like you're bursting bubbles that we all have and don't want to adhere to. So I definitely want to respect your time. I do have one last question, if that's okay.
That's fine.
Okay. Maybe two, if you have another
one. Go ahead.
Okay. So the first one I wanted to ask was something that you shared. I thought it was really, really profound that nobody can think of a song. I don't want to steal your thunder, but you said something about a song related to work. And I was over here tracking. I was like, no, there's got to be one. And can you explain the philosophy behind that thinking and the question you asked?
So we're building a community around the ideal of do good work. That everybody on this earth was planted here to do good work, right? So this ideal of five talents, right? The parable of the talents, you know, I'm here for all of that. Mm-hmm. That God gave you some good work to do, right? But I thought about it like one, psychologically, we just disdain the idea of work. We just disdain it. We just hate the idea of work. Right? Just even you think like, oh my God, I gotta go to work. Most of us hate the idea of work. And then I thought about it, like, why? Where does that even come from? Like, when does it start that we just don't like the idea of work? Right? I'm amazed by that. Like, so I'm researching, like, when does that start? And I notice it with my kids. I said, Kari, go make your bed. It's like, no, it's your bed. You slept in it. Like, make your bed. Right. Mm-hmm. So this concept of like, you know, even from the beginning, we hate work, which is fascinating to me because we have now in corporations an entire group of people who are responsible for employee engagement. But we never recognize the fact that coming into the workforce, people hate work. That aside, the question you asked me, I will give... I don't know, coffee to the first person on your broadcast who can tell you one positive song that relates to going to work or to being at work. Caveat, not Whistle While You Work, because that's a song about suffering through work and getting through work. Not I'm Working on the Railroad, again, all the live long day. That's not about happy about we in work. Most of the songs, I'm telling you, I've been going through Spotify and we are a musical house. My husband was a musician for 30 years before he became pastor. I can't think of one song that's positive about going to work because psychologically we have associated negative connotations around work.
That's so true.
That just... is amazing to me. And I think it does something to our disposition and how we see our entire lives.
Right. Right. You're so right. We don't even, like, you're looking at root problems we didn't even think about. Like, right? Like, that's so good. Like, you got to do, like, a whole book around that. Like, that's fire. And the last question, I want to respect your time. And you weren't prepped for this question at all. What's the difference between one's gift and one's purpose? One's gift and one's purpose.
I'm glad you asked me this question. So, at Christmas, your wife gave you a gift, right? Mm-hmm. Did you open it?
Yes.
Did you use it?
Yes.
Did you use it for the purpose it was created?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. That's the difference. If I took this pencil, mm-hmm. let's just say you gave this pencil to me as a gift, but it's mm-hmm. a gift. But if I used it to, I don't know, pick my ear with it, I'm not using it for the purpose it was created. That's the difference. You can have a gift, right? It's a thing that you are given that's different, right? That's mm-hmm. good for you. It's an ability, right? That's unique. That's beautiful, that allows you to create something amazing. And I feel like all of us have our gifts. Most of us don't utilize them. That's another reason why people don't like work, because enough of us can't be creative. Most of us are pushed to do results, not to be creative. Another conversation for another day. Man. And so the gift is for creation. But if we don't create within the purpose of the context that we're supposed to, then we're not doing it in alignment with what God wants. So we get frustrated. That's the difference.
Wow.
A lot of people have gifts, but a lot of people don't have gifts and purpose.
Wow. That's one of the best illustrations we've interviewed a lot of people on the show, but that is one of the best illustrations I've ever heard around it, and so clear. Wow, Natalie, this is phenomenal.
So David, I want to say one more thing before you get off.
Yeah.
And I got this at Crush. Mm-hmm. When people don't understand the purpose of a thing, they are more likely to misuse it. At best, they will misuse it. At worst, they will abuse it. And so for your listeners, once you understand your gift, make sure you understand the purpose of it so that you don't abuse it, or that you allow yourself to be abused or misused.
Fireworks. Natalie, geez, just dropping bombs and gems and everything on them. Where can people get a hold of you, say, hey, Natalie, I am an organization, I want to learn more, I love your style, or if they want to, book you to speak, or like, where can people get plugged in with you to learn more?
Absolutely. So you can reach out to us on thenatalieparker.com. That is our how to get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. All of our information is there. We are also on Facebook and Instagram. All of our handles are on our website. And, we're super accessible. We try to be like every man. I don't think I'm flighty or distant. And we want to just be out here to do good work. Thank you so much, David, for having me. This has been a blast.
Thank you for being on the show and dropping all this wisdom. We appreciate you, Natalie.
Absolutely. God bless.
I searched all over the world, struggling to find it.
Dear listener, I would like to thank you so much for listening to How I Discovered My Gift with yours truly, David D. Simons. As a token of my appreciation, I would love to give to you my most important piece of work to date, and it's called the Purpose Gift Tape. It's a motivational mixtape geared towards helping you to identify your gifts, which ultimately lead to you discovering your purpose. This is a 6-track album I poured my heart and soul into. It includes beautiful beats and amazing spoken word over it. And I'd love to give that to you as a free gift, as a token of my appreciation for being a part of the community. So to get your copy, all you need to do is go to podcast.org
DavidDSimons.com. That's podcast dot David, the middle initial D, Simons, SIMONS.com, and get yours today. Thank you for being a listener. I'll catch you on the next episode.
How I Discovered My Gift with David D. Simons is proud to be of the amazing and illustrious Alive Podcast Network.